Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Today we are in lesson 178. And at the end of last lesson, we were discussing some of the good qualities of the Edomites. As a matter of fact, we have, as we mentioned, Herod the Great. And we have a lot of information about his day and his exploits. As beside all the bad things that he did, oftentimes when people think about Herod the Great, you know, they think only about the bad things that he did and forget not knowing history, an awful lot of the great things that he accomplished for his land and for the city of Jerusalem in particular. He was a great builder, a man of talent, and of course he accumulated a lot of people of great talent around him, and builders, and many of them were Edomites, and others were of different territories. And he made, in essence, Jerusalem a showcase of the whole world at the time. He made the temple a great temple. You know, before that was a small one from the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, but he made it really great, a magnificent structure, to the point where people called him, called the temple Herod's temple, or the third temple, though it was only the second. But the fact that he improved on it so immensely and built many structures all around it and throughout Jerusalem, and theaters, of course that was for the Romans, and bathhouses, and an awful lot of things, and then built Caesarea in honor of Caesar, and many other places that some of them still remain to this very day from his time. And so much good could have been there between these two brothers, Jacob and Esau, you know, an awful lot of talents between them. And had they used it, both of them, you see, the fault and the problem is not only on the part of Edom, but also on the part of Jacob. Had they both lived in peace and loved one another and served, you know, the God of their fathers as they would in the future, then life could have been majestic for them and they could have been a blessing to the whole earth. But unfortunately, things didn't turn out to be this way. So, you know, we have to consider these matters. And now we'll continue with the writings of Newton, Sir Isaac Newton. He continues speaking about the Tyrians, and this is what he's saying here: this retiring of the Tyrians from the Red Sea to make long voyages on the Mediterranean, together with the flight of the Edomites from David to the Philistines, gave occasion to the tradition, both of the ancient Persians and of the Phoenicians themselves, that the Phoenicians came originally from the coasts of the Red Sea to the coast of the Mediterranean, and presently undertook long voyages, as Herodotus restates. For Herodotus, in the beginning of his first book, restates that the Phoenicians, coming from the Red Sea to the Mediterranean and beginning to make long voyages with Egyptian and Assyrian wares, among other places, came to Argos. Now this was a city inhabited then by Israelites from Dan and the Greek islands, and having sold their wares, seized and carried away into Egypt some of the Grecian, actually they were Israelite people from Dan, so they carried from that place. In other words, you know, Edom, men of the sword, conquering, always true to his nature, he goes to an Israelite town, and apparently either the men were busy or at war or whichever it may be. They overpowered that place, and they carried away women who came to buy from them. And amongst those women was Io, that is Io, that was her name, the daughter of Inachus. In other words, she was a ruler, and she was his daughter, so she was a princess. And so what happened there, you know, these Edomites went over there to Argos. The city was at peace, not suspecting them, being merchants. And so the women, you know, women went out to buy, you know, sort of going to the market. And these people took advantage of that and just kidnapped them. You know, just like an old Malachi trick. And then he continues, the Phoenicians therefore came from the Red Sea in the days of Io, and her brother Phoronius, king of Argos. So her brother was a king and she was a princess. And by consequence, at that time, when David conquered the Edomites and made them fly every way from the Red Sea, some into Egypt with their young king, and other to the Philistines, their next neighbors, and the enemies of David. And of course, and many of them went up to Tyre and Sidon. And that's how the Phoenicians came to be there. And so, when they called themselves Phoenicians, all it meant, they used their own language, the dialect that developed from Hebrew, and it basically meant red. And so the Phoenicians were called Phoenicians, in other words, the red people, Edomites, when they were in that territory of Lebanon, other places they were called Edomites, and other names, whatever names they gave to themselves. And so here we see apparently two flights of the Edomites from the Red Sea area to the Philistine coasts, one at the time of David and another at the time of Jehoram. Newton adds, "And this flight gave occasion to the Philistines to call many places Erythra," which means Edom, "in memory of their being Erythreans or Edomites, and of their coming from the Erythrean Sea," which means the Red Sea, "for Erythra was the name of a city of Ionia, of another in Libya, of another in Locris," in other words, in Ionia was in Greece, in other words, they went to Greece, and they called those cities, wherever they went, Edom, just like the Danites. They went to different places, they called the place by the name of their father, Dan, and the Edomites did the same. And that was a custom at the time, many people did it. And we have accounts of other Israelites from Manasseh. They conquered certain areas and called it by the name of their father, like the ranches or Havot in Hebrew of Ya'ir, which was a Manassite. He went to Gilead, and so it was customary. This is what these people were doing. And so here we see places where the Edomites went to, and we're still quoting here Newton. He says that there was a city in Ionia, that's in the Greek islands, by that name of Edom. Of course, they didn't use the word Edom, they used the word Erythra, which means, in Greek, Edom. And in Libya, North Africa that is, of another in Locris, of another in Bithynia, of another in Cyprus. Obviously, you need to know ancient history and ancient locations to know where the places are. Some of those places are still there to this very day, like Cyprus, Ionia, and most everybody knows about the Ionian island, means the Greek islands. Yavan, Ionia just means Yavan in Hebrew. Yavan, Ionia, so it's all the same. And so another one in Aetolia, of another in Asia near Chaos, and Erythes. Acra was a promontory in Libya, and Erythrian, a promontory of Crete, and Erythros, a place near Tibur. And where was the Tiber? All heard about the Tiber River in Rome. And Erythini, a city or country in Paphlagonia, and the name of Erythria or Erythra was given to the island Gedis, that is in Spain, populated by Phoenicians. In other words, wherever they went, they called the places Edom in their own language. Or others, like the Greeks, and call the place Edom in the Greek language. And obviously, when Edomites go to Greece, they begin to speak Greek, and so now they use the Greek word. Just like, people that come to this country, they forsake their own languages, and now they assume the new language, and therefore the new names. You find Chinese and Orientals, and people come from all over the world, and suddenly they don't use their old names anymore. Now you see them as John and James and Jim and all those names that I never had before. That's the custom of people when they travel from place to place. They take on the new names of their new locations. And that's one reason why it's difficult oftentimes for historians to trace migrations of nations and peoples, and so they lose their identity because of that, without studying further into the matter to realize that no, they go to other places and they still are the same people, they just take on new names. And so this is in essence what Newton tells us, they just travel all over the place, and wherever they went, they called the place Edom, or they were called by others, and in their own languages. And so Edom, like his nephew Dan, son of Jacob, left a serpent-like trail behind him for the sharp-eyed, unbiased historian to notice. And of course, a bit of faith in the scripture may help the objective mind. Now, this was my own comment. And Newton also tells us among the Phoenicians who came with Cadmus into Greece, and that was an earlier voyager, about 600 years before that, Cadmus, there was another Cadmus, and Danaus of the tribe of Dan fled from Egypt after Joseph's death and came into Greece, settling in Argos. And then 600 years later, there was another Cadmus, this time he's an Edomite. And so some people get confused between the two, but you know, there were 6 centuries between them. And so this is what Newton tells us. And there were Arabians and Eritreans, that is Edomites, or inhabitants of the Red Sea, that is Edomites, and in Thrace, talking about Greece, there settled a people who were circumcised and called Odomantes. So now we're talking about a lot of Greeks that are not really Greeks, but children of Edom. You see? Children of brother Edom, twin brother of Jacob. And they are in Greece, and they're called Greeks. Greeks because they're there, just like the Jews that live in this country are called American Jews. And after a while, people forget the Jews, and they just think about Americans. And so, this is still quoting. They were circumcised, so you see, long, long down the road, you see brother Edom still keeping the law of his father, Isaac, the covenant of Abraham. You see, that's why people call them Hebrews. Wherever they went, because the nations didn't circumcise, and here they see people who are circumcised, and you know, they keep certain things that link them to the old Hebrews, or the Hebrews that were in the ancient land, and though they're different in several ways, you know, they still recognize them as Hebrews. And so in particular, you know, the name of the tribe, they call them Odomantes, that is, as something Edomites. The Eritreans who fled from David settled in great numbers in Phoenicia, that is in all the sea coasts of Syria. When they say Syria, they mean Lebanon, because Lebanon in ancient days belonged to Syria, and that's the reason why former president that just died recently of Syria, Assad, constantly claimed that Lebanon belongs to him. And in terms of ancient times, it did belong to Syria because it controlled it. And then there were some cities that were their own. You know, they had their own government, like in Tyre and Sidon. They were city-states. But the whole territory otherwise was controlled by Syria. And so this is what he's saying here. In all the area of Syria, all the coasts, that is, of Syria, and many are still there today. From Egypt, that's my quote, many are still there today. From Egypt to Zidon, in other words, all along the coast. And by calling themselves Phoenicians in the language of Syria instead of Eritreans, gave the name of Phoenicia to all the seacoast and to that only. In other words, that whole territory up there along the coast from present-day Lebanon, and including in those days all the way down to the Gaza, today Gaza Strip, and all along to Egypt. You see, the whole area is along the coast of the Mediterranean, and all the way up to, in essence, Turkey. They call the whole territory Phoenicia. In other words, the land of the Reds. And yet, according to God's command and God's will, that whole land really belongs to Israel. But you see, whenever Edom was able to rise to the top and maintain control or integrate with the local people, this is what he did, constantly vying for the birthright. And so it is evident from several ancient accounts that there was more than one migration of Edomites, and also more than one route was taken by Edom sailors and refugees. Refugees, that is, as it is today, as it happened in the 48 war with Israel, refugees because of wars with brother Jacob. And when Edom loses, Edom becomes a refugee. When Jacob loses, Jacob becomes a refugee. And so it went since the days of the beginning of the conflict. And another source we read, Hadad, king of Edom, made his way towards Egypt. Others took different routes, some flying to the Philistines, and you can read that in 1 Kings, chapter 12, I believe, when, you know, King Solomon rebelled against God, in essence, turned to idolatry, and God raised their enemies against him, and Hadad, king of Edom, in other words, he was a prince, because David destroyed their area, you know, they fled in all directions, and this one was remained, as we mentioned earlier, when Joab went to Edom, the land of Edom, and destroyed every male there. Well, some fled away, and this is one of them, Hadad. Later on, God raised this very person, and he became the king, obviously, later on, and to withstand, in other words, trouble, or become an adversary to Solomon. And so this person, we read the story about it, he fled to Egypt, and in Egypt, when you read the account in the Bible, he had an alliance with the Pharaoh, that apparently was not as happy as he used to be with King Solomon. You know, remember earlier, King Solomon married the daughter of King Pharaoh, that is, of the king, and now he's allowing this Edomite, maybe it's the son of the other king, in, and then he gives him his the sister of his own wife, and so he had a forging alliance there. But anyway, here the quote says, Hadad king made his way toward Egypt. Others took different routes, some flying to the Philistines, fortified Azoth or Azotus, I was in the area of the Philistines, and for them, and proved considerable accession of power and of very singular benefit to that people. And others that dealt in shipping, taking a longer way to escape the rage of the conqueror, that is David and Joab, went towards or into the Persian Gulf. And as I mentioned earlier, when you go into the Persian Gulf, you see a city there called Bosra. To this very day, that's the oil capital of Iraq. What's Bosra doing there when Bosra was the ancient capital of Edom, right below the Dead Sea? Well, obviously, the Edomites went over there. But you see, they went over there in many migrations. Long before, you know, Israel came out of Egypt, they were already there. And so here, at this point, it was natural for them to go over there. You know, they had relatives there. And so today, you know, you can find the oil capital of Iraq in the Persian Gulf. Bosra was, you know, it was named after the ancient capital of Edom in Mount Seir. And when King Nebuchadnezzar's fierce armies had later invaded and destroyed Jerusalem, Edom's generals and soldiers, another part of his armies, you know, because they fled over there. And so now they came, you know, with an opportunity to take vengeance against Jacob for what he'd done to them, that is earlier, obviously, 5 centuries earlier in the days of David. And so they came back with his army as a part of his army, and they had their day of sweet revenge against the last king of David's dynasty, who was Zedekiah. Now this would explain, as we have covered in an earlier chapter on Edom, I'm just quoting here my writings here, why did the Jewish captives in Babylon cried, "Remember, O Lord, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it to its foundation." And then added, "O daughter of Babylon, who are to be destroyed, happy the one who repays you as you have served us. Happy the one who takes and dashes your little ones against the rock." And you remember also, as we mentioned earlier, Jeremiah in chapter 4 in the book of Lamentation is also mentioning this fact that the people of Edom, he's speaking about the daughter of Edom that came and took vengeance, you know, on Judah, that came from the land of Oz. And the land of Oz is in the east. That means in the Chaldean part of the biblical empire of Babylon. And this is exactly the very place where Abraham came from. So again, it was natural for them to be in that area and join the same people, since they are in essence, when you think about it. And then they came and took vengeance because they have never forgotten. And to this very day, even though they don't know their identity, that hatred is inbred within them, and they don't realize where it came from. And so the account continues, as we had quoted before that, about King Hadad and the others. In a word, they were dispersed into all parts, there being no safety for them in their country. You find a familiar scene today in today's Palestinian plight. You know, once they go to war against brother Jacob, and God is not with them, well, they're scattered in all directions, and now you find Palestinians that fled from that territory and scattered all over the Middle East and all over the world. And so it happened many times before. Now, this was a quote from Universal History from the Earliest Account of Times, in Volume 2, page 175. More evidence of two Phoenicians races, that is, two Phoenician races, in other words, first one is not really Phoenician, in other words, they're not red, but you know how historians refer to it. It's just like they would say the early Americans, you know, about the Indians, but, you know, when the Indians were here, there was no such a thing as America. But, you know, later on, in retrospect, people just inject a name, just like they say about Palestine, who was given to the land only in 167 A.D. by the Romans, and yet they called Palestine since the days of Abraham before that. You see, that's the way historians are. Apparently, they don't care too much about real facts, and truth is not something that guides their heart and minds, you know, in their writings. And so many, you know, just casually and carelessly to this very day, speak about the time when the children of Israel came out of Egypt and went to the land of Palestine. There was no such a thing. It was the land of Canaan, and then there were the Philistines in their land, the land of the Philistines, in the Gaza area. But that's why God says, you know, he looks for truth in the inward hearts, because that's not a natural commodity for men. So this is the way they refer to it. So we read here, more evidence of the two Phoenician races is given by John Williams, who wrote in 1858, and he said, I'm speaking not of the Paleoi Phoenicians, but to use the expression of Aristotle, of the Pampeleoi, of those Phoenicians whom the Persian literati, in other words, in our writings, described as immigrants from the Erythraean Sea, that is the Red Sea, and as foreign settlers in Phoenicia. And, unquote, they were the ancient Palestinian immigrants of the Middle East fleeing the Zionist Jew David. And, quote again, where they established themselves as sea traversing merchants. In other words, John Wilson tells us about the knowledge that was in the ancient times, that there were two peoples that inhabited that place. First, the Hamitic people. They were called the Paleoi, Phoenicians later on by the Greeks. In other words, those who came before the real Phoenicians came, the real red people. And they were not red, the former inhabitants. They were darker race. And then the ones that were the real ones, the red ones, they called them Pampaleoi, Phoenicians, instead of Paleoi. And of these Phoenicians, the Persians, in their literature, you know, wrote, because, you know, many of those Edomites, or Phoenicians, or Pampaleo Phoenicians, whatever people call them, later on, many of them went into Persia. And that's how we find also one of the sons of Edom, Amalek, in the land where Mordecai was. And he was trying to destroy the whole Jewish race worldwide, you know, in terms of the empire. Because just like as Palestinians were everywhere, the Edomites were everywhere throughout the whole empire, so were the Jews. And so Edom wanted to persecute Jacob wherever he could. And of course, God let him know what he thought about it. And things didn't turn out the way, you know, Edom thought would. In the person of Amalek and all of his people that rejoiced at that occasion to destroy their brother Jacob. And so Williams adds, that's another historian, the learned Persians from whom Herodotus derived his information must have well known the ethnology of Central Asia, which at that period was governed by Persian satraps, and the fathers of many of them must have been present in the camp of Xerxes, where were collected, according to their races, the armed warriors of all the empire. In other words, John Williams tells us that the Persians knew exactly every single race, and they preserved them in essence according to their ethnic background, and so they knew very well about the Edomites. And they knew that the Edomites came after the war with King David, and they had several ones with them, not just one, and they fled into, among other places, and to Lebanon, and some of them fled into the Red Sea, and some of them from the Red Sea went up to Lebanon, because Job chased them all the way down the Red Sea, in other words, today's Saudi Arabia, along the coast. And many of them, you know, went further down and remained there. And they've been there, and they are still there to this very day. You know, today they are they are, you know, integrated in essence into the Saudi Arabian nation, but they're not like the others. You can see, you go over there and you see lighter-skinned people, you know, sometimes blue eyes, sometimes blonde hair, sometimes reddish hair, you know, and with a mixture, of course, that you also find there. And as we mentioned earlier, they established themselves there, being men of cattle and merchants, so they always need to be by the water. And Medina was their ancient capital in that territory, and now everybody knows Medina is Saudi Arabian city, a holy city, but they don't know the history of it, who established it. As a matter of fact, when you think about names, just think about it. You look into the Spanish world, and you see this word Medina to this very day among them. A lot of families have that name, Medina. Where did they get it from? And also you see names like Isabella, you see? Jezebel. Who is Jezebel? Think about it. The wife of King Ahab. She was the daughter of the king of Sidon. Why did he marry her? Well, Edomites were brothers. You see? They looked alike. So he didn't see any reason not to marry, you know, a relative. Hey, you know, she was a pagan in the sense of religion, but still, kinsmen, relatives, brothers, you see? And a lot of people don't realize that. So you have that bloodthirsty Edomite, you know, Jezebel, that he married, and an Edomite was trying to persecute the prophet Elijah. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. That was the background behind it. You know, she was an Edomite, and that all vengeance and hatred and malice was there, and bloodthirst. And so you find here Jezebel, an Edomite, ruling with her husband over Israel. You see, what an, you know, twist of irony. And then on top of that, you know, with all the evil they have committed in Israel, and she led him into that, and he was the worst king, you know, according to the accounts of God, of Israel, since David. He went all the way, you know, because of his wife, you know, the Edomite, Jezebel, that should have been also a worshiper of God, you know, because of her patriarch, Isaac, you see, the father of her father, Esau. But, you know, they went astray. And so you find this, you know, twist of irony is there. And that's the way it happens. And, you know, and Satan again, you know, through the people of Edom, was trying to devastate and destroy the people of Israel. Well, they were destroyed in essence in terms of the spiritual idolatry that she introduced into the land. And then Omri, who was the father of Ahab, also had another daughter, and her name was Athaliah. And so the king of Judah made the mistake of marrying this woman, Athaliah. And then when he died, that is King Jehoshaphat, when he died, then his son reigned for a little bit, and then he was killed in battle because God wanted his destruction, and Jehu was the one that killed him, the king of Israel, that got appointed instead of later on after Ahab to destroy the house of Ahab. And so Athaliah, who was the sister of Ahab, she was an Israelite, yes, and she now was a queen mother, and so she destroyed everybody she could, with the exception of Joash, whom the high priest whisked away, you know, and he survived, and she reigned over over Judah. But she was, you know, the sister-in-law now of Jezebel. So, you know, you can see how things worked out in those days, and you see the hand of Edom everywhere. And to this very day, you find those complications there, and a lot of people don't realize that. Intricacies and intermarriages between brother Jacob and Edom, and sometimes they're peaceful, and otherwise they're very violent. And so, we continue to read here. If you can recall this history of Haman the Agagite, as discussed before in an earlier chapter, we would remember that he was an Amalekite from Edom's prolific family. And things like that were already mentioned before that, we're not going to repeat. And so let's continue now with another quote by Baldwin. And he wrote, "The doubts and perplexities that have troubled inquiring concerning the Phoenicians are due chiefly to the influence of chronological dogmatism." He added, "The great antiquity of the people called Phoenicians was acknowledged by the ancients. Josephus mentions as a fact, generally understood, that the antiquity of the Phoenicians was as great as that of the Chaldeans and Egyptians. And you read that in Baldwin's Prehistoric Nations, written in 1875. Now, after linking the religious worship of Hercules with both the Phoenicians and all Iberians, Williams says, that is John Williams, of the Phoenicians, we are told that their aim was to establish themselves in the most western region occupied by Hercules, or Heracles, as some called him. And that is to say, they sought to regain a country which in the most ancient times had belonged to the ancestors of their countrymen. And that's Williams in his essays on various subjects. In other words, when the Phoenicians went to Spain, the reason why they did is because there were already Edomites there long ago. And so it was natural for them, since the original Hercules, that is Esau, as the legends say, went into that direction and somewhere down the road and established it as his own territory. And therefore, you know, later on, you know, more Edomites came, and so many centuries down the road, when Phoenicia went down, you know, Tyre and Sidon was destroyed, and Alexander the Great was a great destroyer, ultimately, of Tyre, according to the prophecies of God. And so obviously, you know, they had to flee to other places. And so it was natural for them to go to areas that previously they have controlled, and also areas where their own brethren still were alive there. And ironically, when they went over there, you know, there were also a lot of Israelites, so, you know, we have historic records where they had a lot of conflicts between them, between the Israelites and the Edomites. And we have some historic accounts that I wouldn't mention here, but some people fled from them, Israelites, because they've been persecuted by them, by Brother Edom. I guess, you know, when there are times when Edom rises to the top, that's when it happens. And so they fled and arrived at the British Isles, in specific Welsh, that is Wales, and they were met by a Welsh king who allowed them to join them, you know, and live in their territory also, because they were all Israelites. And so this last statement that we just read about Williams, the fact that they went back to their old country, does recognize the early occupation of parts of Spain by earlier migrations of Edomite tribes, not tribes, but families, actually. And remember, of course, they become tribes as time goes by, dukes and the nations. And remember, Esau's destiny was linked to the birthright tribes. Wherever Jacob went, there was Esau, also ever vying to regain his quote-unquote lost birthright. You see, that's the reason, as Isaac said. They're going to be, in essence, in a struggle, in a battle, you know, and a kind of a conflict that, in essence, would require that both of them will be alongside each other. Otherwise, you know, this conflict is not a reality. You know, if you have the Edomites only in the Middle East, and the Israelites are way down there, you know, or, you know, in Western Europe, and then later on the Americas, and, you know, in other words, and Esau is not around, you see, this whole thing just becomes total nonsense of what Isaac said. But that was the way God planned it to begin with. He generally gave Esau a land adjacent to his brother Jacob. And for a good reason, because he used Esau in many places, now and then, you know, when Jacob was misbehaving, to have the upper hand and to spank, you know, his own brother, so to speak, biblical terminology. And so Williams again writes, when Gades, and Gades was a city established by the Edomites, later on Israelites also lived there, and it was also called Cadiz. When Gades was built, Spain had long been an old country, full of old cities and rich in monuments of an old civilization. And the civilization obviously was of Edomites that were there many, many centuries earlier. And then probably like the political condition of the country in a state of decline. Now this was a quote by Williams. And Jeffreys writes, Phoenicians were acquainted with the country, that is Spain, long before the founding of Rome and Carthage. And that's in Natural History of the Human Race by Jeffreys. And he adds on the same page, the Iberians were an intelligent family acquainted with the art of writing, you know, just like all the Hebrews were in the days of Abraham. And at a very early period, they sacrificed human victims, just like Israelites did because of the pagan, you know, influence. And that is to sacrifice human victims to their divinities and their priests, pretending to foretell future events from an inspection of the palpitating entrails. Now, all these were customs of the Edomites, of the Moabites, of the Ammonites, because they all learned that from the Canaanites, obviously. And that's what God told them, you know, don't mix up with them, you know. Don't even mix up with your own brothers of Edom, of Moab, of Ammon, because of their Gentile religion. Not because they were Gentiles, they were not, in essence. You know, when we say Gentiles, we mean other nations. But, you know, they were not unrelated to Abraham or Isaac or Jacob. They were related, you see. So in one sense, you know, they are relatives. And of Edom, God always said, you know, that's your brother, even though he was totally into idolatry. But still, even Edom retained, you know, certain laws that he was taught by his father Isaac, like circumcision and who knows how many others. And so he says, the Phoenicians or Edomites also sacrificed human beings to their deities. From the classical writers, we know that human sacrifices took place in human emergencies. This is a part of the quote. And from Robert Anderson in The Extinct Civilizations of the Past. And Sias adds, that's a famous historian, the Phoenicians priests scorched themselves or gashed their arms, and as did the Hebrew priest of Baal, in their encounter with the prophet Elijah, as you can read it in 1 Kings 18:28. And so this is what this priest did. They gashed their arms and breasts to win divine favor. And human sacrifices were made to Moloch or Milcom. Now, Moloch or Milcom were ancient deities that were worshipped even by the Israelites. And they were deities of local nations, Edomites, you know, Moabites, Ammonites, and others. And the parent was required to offer his eldest or only son as a sacrifice, and the victim's cries were drowned by the noise of drums and flutes. Now, this is from our Sais in archaeological and ethnological papers of the Peabody Museum. Now, what did the Iberian look like? In other words, the Edomite. Did they resemble the Edomite Phoenicians? Jeffries made these remarks. The Spaniards derive their descent from the Iberians, obviously, known to the ancients as mariners, and were closely allied to the Phoenicians, who they much resembled. They have been grouped with the Turanian type, but erroneously, as they are evidently Aryans. In other words, some people thought they were of the race of Japheth, you know, the yellow race, but they're not, because they're all white people, they're Aryans. And because the people of Japheth have been there earlier, therefore some people, you know, in their ignorance, not having all the facts, just like saying, you know, that, you know, all the Americans that came from Europe, because they came to the land that they called America later on, and here were Indians, and some people, you know, down the road look at that, and they don't distinguish one from the other, and they call everybody, you know, by the same name of like either Indians or, you know, the yellow race, because the Indians are linked to the yellow race, you know. And if you don't distinguish between one population and migration and the others, obviously you get confused. And we can continue, you know, with this historic account of Edom, but I think we said enough about it. After all, you know, the purpose of this series of lectures is to teach the law, not history. But just wanted to give you some information there about the whereabouts of Edom, where he went, and all that linked to what we read earlier in Genesis 26 and 27, 28, about the blessings, the birthright, and links to history, and these peoples. And so the information was necessary there. You know, if you go into history, you see what these people of Edom have done, where they went. You study about the Spanish Habsburgs, you know, because they intermarried with the Habsburgs of Austria. And you see how much domain they had over many of the people of Israel, And those accounts were there, and some of them have been recorded. Many of them actually have been recorded if you dig into history. They knew who these people were. And then, of course, everybody knows about the Inquisition, you know, the Spanish Jews who lived there from the Second Temple era, and some of them even before that, you know, since the First Temple, were already having records that people in Spain were sending gold to King Solomon for the temple. Because, you know, they were both, Israelites there and other tribes of Israel, and so those records are there. And then in later times, you know, about six, 7 centuries ago, you know, the Spanish Inquisition took hold of that territory, and much evil and wickedness was there. And there was, ironically, another Jezebel there, you know, Isabella, and Ferdinand. And they, in essence, orchestrated, you know, the expulsion of the Jews there that did not want to convert to Catholicism. And, you know, the horrible evil that came, and calamities and torture and torment that came upon the Jews there because of the Inquisition. But the Inquisition, you know, reached all over Europe. And many Israelites also, hundreds of thousands, we have historic accounts, that died by the hand of the Inquisition and orchestrated a lot of it, you know, by Brother Edom. And then later on, you know, we find the history of the people of Edom going to the New World. But God, as usual, says, no, this land belongs to Israel. And just like, you know, with the British Isles, you know, the Edomites also wanted to conquer that territory, you know, to conquer that territory. And God says, no, that belongs to my people Israel. That's a birthright, a part of it. And, you know, the constant conflicts that they had, and sometimes they had alliances, even intermarriages. And, you know, the Spanish Armada's story, and how another Jezebel, this time is an Israelite, Queen, you know, Elizabeth, it's the same name, on the other side now, and the victory was with her because God gave it to the people of Israel, you know, in particular the Ephraimites and Manasseh that were there, and not to the people of Edom, as they totally devastated the Armada there. And the queen realizes that. She even quoted a statement from Moses, you know, the Song of Moses, about God, you know, blowing with his nostrils, and they were all drowned. And later on, you know, they came into the New World. Everybody knows about the conquistadors, and the historic accounts are not complimentary of the people of Edom who came over here. Of course, they're not known by that name of Edom, but, you know, there was the spread reign of terror, and they decimated, you know, many of the Indians here and cultures that were very civilized in many ways. And, of course, they also had their pagan ideas and concepts and religion. But I think we've said enough about it. We can continue with that to this very day. We find again, side by side, Brother Jacob, Brother Edom. Brother Edom claims, well, this land is my land. I've been here before that. And God, in essence, says, no, this is the land of my people. And Edom doesn't like that. And you find more and more people from Latin America who are, unfortunately, just like, you know, the prophecies said, they're going to be subservient to Jacob in this position. But many of them, they just use their talents, which they have an awful lot of talents, and they work hard. And of course, many of them were mixed with the native population of Indians, so you find a mixture among them. Then you find the pure Spaniards, you know, the pure Edomites, and the other ones who basically rule all of South America, you know, the 20 countries of them. They're at the top, but you can see what's happening there all the time, you know, constant revolutions. Now there, you know, now and then, you know, they have peace, and then in recent times they're more peaceful with each other. But still, an awful lot of violence, an awful lot of bloodshed, and you see among them who come to this land, you know, those who submit to the will of God to the degree they understand it, you know, they live at peace with Jacob, and they have wonderful qualities, and they add an awful lot to the culture of Jacob. But others, you know, who give themselves to violence, and they continue the same old line, you know, of Brother Edom. And so when the future comes ahead of us, we're going to see an awful lot of things happen there, just like in the days of old. Hatred, animosity between Jacob and Esau, and bloodshed, and finally, unfortunately and tragically for Edom, the ones who oppose God, you know, utter destruction. Until the next time, so to speak. And so, you know, this information, when you go back to history, and the biblical prophecies that we read before that, in Obadiah, in Isaiah, you know, 63, in Jeremiah, in Babylon, you know, matters about Babylon, Tyre, and Sidon, you begin to see all these things. And, you know, you read Isaiah 14, and about the king of Babylon, and you see the link there with Edom. Then you read, Ezekiel 28, the king of Tyre, and you see there again the same personality behind both, the spirit being. Well, you put all these things together, you have a better understanding of what Edom is, what Babylon is, what prophecy is all about, what the future is all about, what the real origins of the Middle Eastern conflict is all about, and how God is going to bring it to an end. But hopefully at the end of the story, you know, as the book of Revelation at the end basically tells us, God is going to come down with heaven in Jerusalem, it's going to be all and in all. So the end of the story is good for all, and Brother Edom and Brother Jacob are going to be reconciled, but in between there, unfortunately, an awful lot of blood is going to flow there. But we should never allow ourselves to have a personal animosity on either side, because we all have good things, bad things, and we all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, and we all submit to God and follow His path and commandments, we're all doing well. And if we don't, we all pay the penalty. Anyway, we're going to start with that, and I hope I gave you enough information here, and then we'll continue again from where we stopped last time. And this is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time, back in the book of Genesis.